This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this February 22nd edition of Invest Talk. And we're almost through the month of February already. You know our motto, above average investing for the average investor, breaking through the ranks of the average investor. It's a process and it never ends. Investing in the stock market, real estate as also, not just the stock market, demands a lot that you got to keep current and keep learning. There are a lot of moving parts. I've invested over the years in many real estate, and some I've been very successful with, some I've total failure. So real estate can be very difficult. So can the stock market. So if you're just starting out, you're looking at the whole machine, focus on just one part at a time, because this is a huge, investing your hard-earned money is a huge endeavor. It takes time, effort, knowledge. It just give yourself time. Don't try to learn all at one time, because it's impossible. The pieces will come together at some point. First and foremost, I'm here to try to answer your questions. So let's get to our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART. Here's a question that came in before today's program.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Wanted to see what your thoughts were on Cummins, CMI. Looks like it's bottomed out at about 166 right now. The chart looks pretty cyclical, either based on sort of some sort of annual cycle or earnings report or something. But it looks like it's at its bottom right now, was up to about 200 or so just a few months ago. Its earnings report came out and it coincided with the late January crash or correction. I wonder if it's a good time to buy. I think there was something in the earnings report was mostly positive. It looks like it's going to have good growth this year, something like 4 to 8% annually. But I think there was something pretty negative in the earnings report that turned a lot of people off and got them to sell, which also coincided with the correction. Was going to see if you guys had any insight into why people were selling it and also if it's a good buy right now. Thanks a lot.
Okay, this is Cummins Engine. We talked about this a few days ago. Manufactures diesel, natural gas engines, electric power operating generation systems, and engine-related products. CMI is a symbol, CMI. It's a $27, $28 billion company. It's been growing its earnings and growing its sales in a recent year. So it's doing pretty well. It's going to make $12.53 a share this year, $12.53. And then, $10.62 this year, $12.53 next year. And I have 2019's earnings coming in at $13.34. So that's looking pretty far out there. That's difficult. It has come back, came right down to the 200-day moving average, and this is a buy point. $167.02 today, and it was about a $191.92 less than a month ago. So that's a pretty good pullback, and you can't call anything but a pullback. And yeah, their earnings had a couple of issues, but still came in pretty strong. And if it's a good company, return on equity is 25%, which is pretty high for a $27 billion company. And they don't have much debt. So the company is run very well. I would be a buyer in this area. I think this is a good area to a good price. Now, it doesn't mean it can't fall further. There's lots of support at 157, more at 150, more at 142 or so. So there's huge supports stepping down, but this looks like a good place to buy. It looks like it's right at the 200-day moving average, which makes it a higher low than the last time it fell, which was in November, and the time before that, which was in August. Higher highs, higher lows. So this is where you buy it. I like Cummins. 888-99-CHART, everybody. Welcome to the February 22nd edition of Invest Talk, and we are here live for you. Now, we talked yesterday about the strength of the dollar and the forces that come into play to weaken the dollar in relationship to other world currencies. All investors must understand how currency, foreign currency, fluctuates against our currency and how that affects our portfolios. The U.S. dollar is still the most important currency in the world, and therefore its direction will be the primary driver of how foreign currencies will hurt or harm your holdings. The U.S. dollar is one, the major reserve currency. There's other reserve currencies. Yen, the euro, those are reserve currencies, but U.S. dollar is still dominant. For many years, the dollar got stronger, especially against the euro. You know, that's because the confidence building in America went up. The political will to fix the fiscal problem in Europe fell. Recently, however, the dollar has fallen as willingness in Europe to fix their economic issues has increased. Remember, the currencies are traded against each other for strength and weakness. You look at other currencies. So when the dollar goes down, which has been the trend over the last, several years, the dollar goes down. Companies in other countries are companies that have foreign operations get an earnings boost in dollar terms because the foreign currency goes up when our dollar goes down. Okay? That's just how, what things are being sold and what currency. You bring it back to here, you have the currency, difference. So if their currency is stronger than ours, you bring back more money. But if their currency is much higher than ours and you made products here, you can see how that would make the products here look cheaper. You got to understand how this works. The opposite is true, of course. The easiest way to follow the patterns is to watch the longer-term trends of the ETF, UUP, which I mentioned before. That's the U.S. dollar, FX, the euro, FXY, the yen. There's others you can watch, too. What will the currency fluctuations do to the assets in your holdings? What will it do? Well, you'd have to try to stay with the winners, that's for sure. But understand how the companies make money in foreign markets, not just your market here in the United States. How much earnings are coming from outside the United States, especially the big companies? And if that money is going to be repatriated back here, what will that turn into? Got to watch it. The whole thing is complex, right? I mean, this is just one aspect of investing, currency valuations. Especially in big companies that you're buying or foreign companies that you're buying. But that's just the way it is. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what else is going on today? What's going to be our topic? What's wrong with bond funds? That's going to be one of our talking. You've heard me talk about buying actual bonds versus bond funds. So what's better, what's worse, and what's the difference? Also, I want to talk American finances, American, the U.S. government finances, and how that affects what individuals' finances are. Okay, so I'll probably focus on the individual finances, but we still will worry about the U.S. finances. And the head of the world's largest hedge funds says we are in a pre-bubble phase with a 70% chance of a recession. I'm going to point out the flaws in what he's talking about. Of course there's a recession on the horizon. Of course there is. That makes no sense to even talk about, you're in the pre-bubble phase and there's 70% chance of recession. Of course there is. There always is. We're always moving to recession and we're always moving toward moving out of the recession. Economic strength, too. It's when. And what's going to cause it, how deep it's going to be. Those are things important. And finally, why buying on dips is more dangerous in 2018 than it had been in 2017, 2016, 2015. Why is it more dangerous this year than it has been? And I got three reasons why I think it's more dangerous. Dangerous meaning you already see it. Take a look at the volatility of the stock market. You see how volatile this stock is becoming. The Dow was up 164 points today, but the Nasdaq was down 8. The S&P up 3. So that 164 points up for the Dow, it was much higher in the middle of the day. 250, 275, I don't remember exactly. See the volatility that we're dealing with? Even intraday volatility. Lots of volatility. Now, don't panic about that. Don't worry about that. That's not a bad thing. Volatility is not a bad thing. It gives you opportunities. You know, you want the opportunities. But it's not a bad thing. It's normal for the market to be volatile. We just haven't seen normal in so long, it feels wrong. It feels like it's scary. Don't worry about it too much. Not the volatility. This is InvestTalk, everybody. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. So what is in the what is the downside of a weak dollar for consumers? It increases the cost to import oil, causing oil prices to rise. This means a dollar buys less gas, and that pinches many consumers because we drive our cars. That in turn may impact the economy. Do you have questions about dollar strength or your portfolio? 888-99-CHARGE, how you get through right now. Let's talk to Wesley in Stockton. How you doing, Wesley?
Doing great. Thank you for taking my call, Steve. Love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
I was calling about Walmart. It had a big drop yesterday, and yep. It was all because of the financial report they just put out. But they've done some changes, and I was wondering if it's still an overvalued stock with the drop.
I don't think so. I think this is setting up to be a good buy point. Walmart. I don't know if I buy it yet because Wesley, you want it to calm down to let it go sideways. It got up to $110 and then fell to $92, $91, $92, and it fell very sharply the last 2-3 days, and it was all worry about their internet. Sales and of course Amazon. But if you looked at the numbers, if you stood back and say, you'll notice that the same store sales went up from year over year. The numbers were pretty darn good. It was in the online sales where everybody focused. And to be honest, online is not their bailiwick. It's their store sales. But they know they have to address it, and they know they're going to continue to address it. But it's not going to be as simple as maybe investors thought it was going to be. They're going to make $4.91 this year. That's 12% higher than last year, and then another 7% next year, $5.28. So it's a $92 stock. So that means it's going to be under a 20 PE, about 19. And yeah, I mean, 15 would be more reasonable. But their return on equity is 17%, which is very good. It's a huge company. I would like to see it drop more, Wesley. I mean, to give you a better buy-in point. But we own Walmart in many of our accounts, and we're going to buy more of it as soon as it calms down and goes sideways.
So I have another question. That's how I think about Walmart. Financing.
Sure.
I'm about to buy my first property and to get out of the PCI or PMC for 20% down, I was going to take it out of my Roth IRA. Do you think that's a good idea?
Say that again. It kind of hollows, like the connection's not very good. Say that again. Okay. I'm going to have to go after the break. We're right up against the break. I'm sorry, Wesley, but hold on. I'll take it. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, everybody. The number is 888-99-CHART. Okay, thank you for holding, Wesley. I appreciate it. What was that second question of yours? I'm sorry.
So, in short, is it ever a good idea to take money out of your Roth IRA to help you put a good down payment on a house?
Yes. Pretty easy question for me. Okay.
Yeah.
Because that is a house is another asset. Okay, it grows in value. It's a very different asset than, stocks and bonds, which are more risky. A house is less risky. And I think it's a good store of wealth as you pay down that mortgage. So, and you get to use leverage. Think about it. You only put, 10, 20% down on a house, and you get to borrow all that money from the bank. Well, that's leverage. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea. In a, from a Roth, you can take out all the money you put into it without a penalty. You just can't take out the money it grew, because then you have to pay a penalty on that. Do you know the difference?
Okay. Yeah, no.
Okay, so.
My Roth is actually with you guys, too. But okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. That's a good question. Let's go to Matt in Washington. How you doing, Matt?
I'm well, Steve. How are you doing?
I am very good. I appreciate your call.
Good to hear. Yeah, thanks for taking it. I'm wondering about an ETF called TBT. It's an ETF that shorts, I believe, 20-year Treasury notes.
Yes, it does. And that would be a Treasury bond, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Treasury bonds. Okay. So as interest rates are rising and will be rising for the foreseeable future, bond prices will be going down. So doesn't it seem like this would be a pretty good long-term investment? Or is there some sort of caveat that I'm missing there?
Nope, there's no caveat. And yes, TBT, everybody, is the ProShares Ultra 20-Year Treasury Short. So what that means, in simple terms, if the treasuries go up in interest rate, this ETF will go up in value. So interest rates going up, this ETF will go up. If interest rates go down, and specifically the 20-year Treasury index, then this will go down. So Matt, if you believe interest rates are on the rise for the foreseeable future, and I kind of do myself, until the next recession, interest rates will be pushed back down. You know that, right?
Right.
So
okay.
So this thing should rise as the Fed keeps pushing up on interest rates.
Okay. Okay. Awesome.
Should.
All right,
okay.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for the call, Matt. Appreciate it. TBT is a symbol. That's an ETF in the inverse performance of the 20-year Treasury Index. I hope that makes sense to everybody. Bill in Wisconsin. How you doing, Bill?
Hey, pretty good. I had a question about a tax loss, carry forward to the current year, and I have some money to invest, and I was thinking, well, it might be better to invest in something that would give me a capital gain to offset the loss rather than investing in, like, a big dividend play. Does something like that make sense to you?
Yeah. You'll always get to keep the capital loss. And you can apply, for everybody else, let me explain a little bit, Bill. A capital loss is if you invested in something, an asset like a stock, and it went down in value, but you can invest in a home and it went down in value, and you sell it at a loss, that's a capital loss. That capital loss can be applied against capital gains. And that's what Bill is talking about. Long-term capital gains and losses is things you've held over a year. Short-term is under a year. So you can put a long-term capital gains against long-term capital losses, short-term against short-term, but you can't put short-term losses against long-term. You know what I'm talking about there. And the one point I wanted to make is you can write off $3,000 of that capital loss, $3,000 of it per year against your ordinary income. So you can take $3,000 off your adjusted income for capital losses, but no more than $3,000 a year, unless they change that to the new tax law, which I don't think they have. But I, so
yeah, that would
you know,
be
it's
nice
brand
if
new.
They did,
huh? So you can apply it, $3,000 of it, to your ordinary income for 2017.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
That makes sense. I was just wondering if there's, because it might have to, if I just don't take any gains, then it would have to be applied for multiple years because it's a bit large. But if I was to.
But you won't be able.
Choose something.
Bill, you won't be able to use your Roth losses or gains in your Roth or your regular IRA or 401k. You can't, those don't have taxes on them anyway, so
oh,
you
right.
can't apply
yep.
losses to the, yeah, so. Okay?
All right. Well, thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate your call. Thank you, Bill. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, should you buy an investment property? I kind of like investment property. I don't have any left, but I kind of like them. That's one of our topics on the next Invest Talk. For now, you can drive the discussion. My live line between 4 and 5 Pacific time is 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next. First, good reason number 5 for a portfolio checkup with Steve. Steve says that many portfolios he looks at are weighted in just one or two sectors. A diverse mix of market sectors is so important to the health of a retirement portfolio. Steve can help you reorganize your retirement portfolio. He can make suggestions about the sectors of the future. And if you'd like, a KPP financial program that fits your goals and your life situation. There's never a cost for InvestTalk listeners and no sales pitch or obligation of any kind ever. To schedule your one-on-one conversation with Steve, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab and then Portfolio Review, or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. And now let's continue with the podcast. Invest Talk. And Steve is here to give you a second opinion. Tell us about the mix in your portfolio. The anytime number, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. So the pros and cons of bonds, a bond fund versus bonds themselves. And bonds are really great diversifiers. You know, to diversify your portfolio away from the riskier stock market. And as you get older, they're really good for producing income and taking less risk. And I like bonds. I have no problems with bonds. I have a little bit of a problem with bond funds and bond ETFs. Now, I would not have a problem with bond funds and bond ETFs if interest rates were very high right now, because I would think they would probably start to roll over and come down. But interest rates are very low and have been for some time. And when interest rates start to go up, bond funds, the net asset value of a bond fund or ETF goes down. Okay, but if you buy the bonds themselves directly and own them directly, you buy them at par, you collect whatever interest rate it is. Let's say you buy a 5-year bond at 5% per year. You buy it at par, let's say $10,000. You get 5% a year on that $10,000, and then you get your $10,000 back when it matures. During those 5 years, if interest rates rise, that bond of yours will go down in value, but it will always return to par at maturity. That doesn't happen in a bond fund or a bond ETF. Now, the difficulty is, you, an individual investor, unless you have a $1 million portfolio, you won't be able to get very good bonds. Bond dealers don't want to deal with you. They don't want to talk to you. You're not big enough they make such a little piece on a bond that it's just not worth it. You're not worth it to them. Okay? You're just not worth it. So you don't get the good bonds. You get whatever they have in their inventory. Yeah, here you go. Where my office, we get a call all the time. Every week we get calls from bond dealers, and we have several that we deal with that offer us, you know, nice bonds, because we buy a couple million, 5 million, whatever it is at a time. And then we give it to our clients. So we break it up into smaller increments, you know, $10,000 each, $20,000, depends on the size of their portfolio. And then so they get good quality bonds. It's going to be more difficult for you as an individual to do that unless you have a big portfolio. So there's your problems with it. The pro of a bond fund, of course, is you get diversification. You get a lot of different bonds. And you can try to mitigate the interest rate rise effect on your bond fund by buying bond funds with shorter maturity, average maturity dates in the bond fund, or buy a bond fund that has a floating interest rate that goes up with it. There's ways to try to mitigate it. It's still more difficult, but you can do it. Okay, let's get back to our 24-hour listener line, pick up another question, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is John from Charlotte. I'm considering purchasing some Exxon shares, and I was wondering to get your thoughts on the fundamentals of Exxon, XOM, and when where a good buying price might be. Thanks. Bye.
ExxonMobil. I like ExxonMobil a lot. It's the world's largest oil company, $321 billion in size. And, of course, it's engaged in exploration, production, transportation, and sales of crude oil and natural gas. It is one of the largest natural gas producers here in the United States. About, I don't know, maybe 5-10 years ago, they bought, I forgot the name of the company, but a huge natural gas producer. And that catapulted ExxonMobil into being one of the bigger natural gas producers. I think it's a great buy right where it is. It went up to $88 here at the beginning of in January, maybe the beginning of February, about $88. It had a nice year last year, and then it fell to $75. Now you can't get, that's a 15% or so pullback. It fell to the low it made in August and September, and now it's trying to move sideways. I think this is about as weak as it's going to get, and this would be a place where you want to buy it. Could it go down lower? Sure, and a correction of the market is not finished and it corrects more, it could. But this is a good buy point for it. It's going to make $4.77 this year and then $4.70 next year. So that you're not going to get a lot of growth out of the company because it's so big. It can't. But it pays 4.1% dividend right now. 4.1%. Why would you not want to own a stock that pays 4.1% with a future that's pretty strong? They're not going away. You know, and if you bring up the subject of electric cars and say, well, see, these oil companies are going to sell for electric cars, you don't know what you're talking about. Yes, electric cars are going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. They could double, triple, quadruple in size and still be a tiny fraction of the automobile industry. And it's going to take years upon years for that to happen. And meanwhile, the rest of the world, the third world, is going to start using more and more oil products. They're just because they don't use nearly as much as we do or anybody else because they're a third world country. So I can't see any problems with ExxonMobil for at least a decade or more with competition coming from electric cars. I don't see it. And so I think this is the price right in here that you buy it. You can just go ahead and buy it right now. I think it would be fine. Gene in North Carolina. How you doing, Gene?
Hey, Steve. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate your call. You want to talk about bond ETFs?
Bonds versus bond ETFs and bond mutual funds?
Sure. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I was wondering if there are certain types of bond ETFs where all the bonds are from a specific date, mature on a specific year, the same year, and it doesn't change over the course of the ETF.
Yes. Those
and
are
that,
better.
That
I like
those. Like that. Yeah, it sounds like that's the best of both worlds, where you can get diversity of many bonds in one fund, but yet if you hold it to maturity, that bond ETF, it will redeem at the end of the calendar year that all the bonds
will
go back to par.
Yep, and that's a good way to do it, Gene. I have no problems with that. As I said, I like bonds. Most bond funds don't work that way, but I know that
there's
a couple of bond ETFs. But that one, I've heard of it. I haven't really looked into it. I haven't, like, for instance, you want to see what the quality of bonds are inside it. Gene, did they say it? I like investment grade or better, which is BBB+ or higher.
What happens is that there's two ETF fund families, the Spiders and the Guggenheim, mm-hmm. and they have a whole set
yes.
of bond ETFs that are like this on specific years, And for each year that they have a specific ETF for, they have one that's corporate grade and then one that's high yield grade.
Okay. So it's high yield is more risky, but you'll get more yield. Mm-hmm. How many years do they go out? One, two, three, five? How many years?
There are many. I forgot what they are, but they have the year. The year is part of the name. Okay. So you can tell.
Okay. I got you. I'm going to have to look into those. But you can see why, Gene, I kind of like the idea, right? You understand why I like that idea. Because they go back to par. So, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
There's one interesting fact about these that I read about that was interesting, and that's the fact that if a particular ETF holds, let's say, 250 bonds and they all mature in the same year, what happens is that some mature in January and February and December of the same year, and as they mature, the ETF doesn't distribute that to you. It actually holds it internally in the ETF as cash. And so it was mentioned that the year that the ETF matures or will liquidate, it actually underperforms other bond funds because it has to hold all the maturing bonds in cash, and it doesn't pay out obviously any more dividends for that particular bond that matures until the end of December.
So do they disband? That's one of the things I would look at. I was wondering if they disband the and just give you back your money at the end of the year.
That's right.
Another bond fund. Is that how they do it?
It liquidates at the end of the year, right? At the end of the calendar year, end of December.
So that particular year, they'll underperform. You still get some yield, but that yield will keep going down that year.
Right, because more and more of the funds will be moved into money market as each particular individual bond matures.
Exactly. It makes sense. I can see how that makes sense. And I kind of like the idea. I do.
Yeah.
Gene, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Thank you. Do you have questions about college savings plans? New tax bill stops the Coverdell program. Did you know that? The new tax bill stops the Coverdell program. But both Series I savings bonds and Section 529 college savings plan offer tax advantages ways to save for college. They're still there. What are the merits of a prepaid tuition? Did you know that was part of the 529 program, the prepaid tuition plan? Anyways, these 529s are offered by states. They have to be state-sponsored, and they're all different depending on the state. But you can be in any state and buy any 529 in any other state. You don't have to buy your own state where you live. So there's advantages and disadvantages. So ask your questions now if you want to talk about it. 888-99-CHART.
If you enjoy InvestTalk, why not tell a friend? Tell them about how easy it is to talk to a professional investment advisor. The helpline is open 24 hours a day, whether you have a question about a stock or a life insurance policy. Steve and Justin are ready for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, good afternoon. My name is Gustavo. I've been listening to your show for a while now, and I've been learning a lot. My question is in regards to the exchange-traded fund. Ticker is GEX. I'm just trying to look to further diversify my portfolio. I know they're big on alternative energy sources, so I was wondering what your thoughts were on it. Thank you very much.
Okay, this is the VanEck Vector Global Alternative Energy exchange-traded fund seeking performance corresponding to the Global Index Extra Liquid. I'd have to look it up to see what's in it. I don't know specifically what's in it in that particular index. So it's hard for me. It's a very small fund. It's only a $92 million fund. And it only trades 5,900 shares a day. That's very, very small. I don't know if I can give you an opinion on it because I got to look at the Ardmore Global Index, Extra Liquid Index, whatever that is, Extra Liquid. What's Extra Liquid stand for? Extra Liquid, okay. Remember, it says alternative. Alternative energy. Well, alternative energy means no gasoline or oil. I mean, normally. But then they have the word extra liquid in the index. They're tracking extra liquid. Well, that indicates it should be oil and gas. I don't know. I'm in an oil lease. So I'm sorry, I can't really help you on that because I got to look the darn thing up and read what the perspective says about it before I really give you an answer. Sorry about that. Okay, head of the world's largest hedge fund says that we are in a pre-bubble phase with a 70% chance of a recession. That headline there makes absolutely no sense. When I read it, I said, huh? I need to read this just to see what the heck they're talking about. Because, why doesn't it make sense? Okay, it says, we're in a pre-bubble phase. Well, are we always in a pre-bubble phase until we're in a bubble? I don't get that. We're in a pre-bubble phase. So what? And then a 70% chance of recession? We have a 100% chance of recession. It's when, not if. So and then you put these two things together, pre-bubble phase with a 70% chance of recession, I go, well, that makes no sense. So I read it, and I won't give you his name. I don't want to. But he's a big hedge fund guy. And what the only thing you can take away, I'm wasting my time reading this article personally. But the only thing I can take away is that he felt that the recession would be between 18 and 24 months from now. See, now if you say we have a 70% chance of recession within 12 months, that at least makes more sense. But, you know, the headline did not make sense. But he thinks between 18 and 24 months. Okay, within 2 years. Well, I could see that possibly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably not this year. See, that's why he said 18 months, because it's not going to happen this year. So it might be 2019, 2020. And I would agree with him on that. But I don't know about the pre-bubble phase. I don't, you know, what he doesn't talk about where the bubble is that he thinks is pre. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see. But for you and me, we can't worry about that. You guys buy good, solid companies. I like value companies better than growth companies at this point. Growth was the big cap growth last year was the main thing that drove stocks. But this year, I don't think that's going to happen. I think we're going to have a choppy year this year. Much more choppy than it was last year. We're always open to your money questions, everybody. Check in now, 888-99-CHART, or check in after hours if you like. We'll do our best to answer all questions on the next Invest Talk. 888-992-4278.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is Drew from Louisiana. Love the show. Just got a question about symbol G. G as in Gary, C as in Charlie, B as in Victor. Just has a nice dividend, and just want to see what y'all think about it. Thanks.
Okay, this is the Gabelli Convertible Fund, closed-end fund investing in convertible securities for high total return of current income and capital appreciation. It paid last year 8.5%. So it's a $5.68 fund. It's closed in fund means it could sell at a discount or a premium to the asset, the value of the assets inside the fund. So meaning that if maybe the assets are worth $5 and this is selling at $5.68, or maybe the assets are worth $6 and this is selling at $5.68. So the value of the assets can be higher or lower than what the actual price is of the convertible. What's a convertible? Security. What's a convertible? Well, Warren Buffett, during the Great Recession, bought bonds from, I think it was J.P. Morgan Chase, about $10 billion worth to give them that cash so they can survive. And these bonds were convertible. They were convertible bonds, convertible into common stock at a certain price. Okay, so he bought these bonds from them, and they're paying like, I don't know, 7-8%, some really good rate. But he can convert them into common stock to J.P. Morgan in the future within so many years at a certain price. That's a convertible. He did convert it into the stock common stock price and made billions doing it because Warren Buffett's really, really smart, and he has a lot of money, and he could do a lot of things with that money. And Warren Buffett waits for recessions before he does stuff like that. He waits for a recession. He loves to invest in recession. He has the most cash he's ever had sitting on the sidelines right now. Now, I don't know if it's because he's just building cash or he can't find things to invest in, but the fact remains he has the most cash in his Berkshire Hathaway fund that he's ever had right now. I reported that late last year. And he still has it. Just an interesting point. 888-99-CHART. Okay. American finance, your finances. What I'm talking about the average person out there. What is the problem? What are some of the problems? Well, one of them, do we have too much debt? 21% have more debt. 21% of the people have more debt than they have an emergency fund. Our total debt is $13.1 trillion. That is at a record high. Over 51% of Americans have less than $1,000. Did you know that? Over 51% of American households have less than $1,000. 39% say they don't have anything. And also, Americans worry more about saving for their next vacation than they do for retirement. 36% versus 32%. Does that make sense to anybody? And finally, one other final point. Americans prioritize paying the wrong bills. They pay what you should be paying first. If you can't afford all the bills you have, what you should be paying first is the secure debt, like mortgages and car loans, not the unsecured debt, like credit card loans or personal loans. Those you pay last. The secure debt is what you should pay first. Okay? So I find it disturbing that we have $13.1 trillion in debt. Household debt. I find that disturbing. Everybody. That's our whole national income, GDP, is around 13 point something trillion. And here it is. We have that much in personal debt. Not government debt. Time to wrap it up. A reminder, I'm meeting in March with individual investors for one-on-one retirement reviews. I'll be in San Jose on the 14th of March. If you'd like to reserve your hour with me, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. I hope it's been a worthwhile hour for you. Justin Klein and I want to thank you for making this part of your day. I do really appreciate it. And let's do it again one more time this week, tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. They thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.